We actually just read a book not too long ago, and
Yeah.
we were fortunate enough to actually know the author.
Yes, actually we are. I do believe the book actually is called Ghosts of the Valley, if I can recall that clearly off the top of my head. So the author of which, as you said, is somebody that we know, is actually a buddy of mine. Believe it or not, me being infantry, he's an MP.
Out of here.
No, for real.
What?
Yep,
Nobody
yeah.
likes MPs.
One particular thing I wanted to actually bring up and kind of get you talking on was because there are a lot of people within the army as a whole that experience a lot of these same things. And I really felt as though if you talked about it and we brought it up, those that were listening could kind of have like actual like real feel along with it because they know and they've been there. So the thing that stood out to me the most when I first started going through it was you said we all have our own internal monologue, our commentary that seems to run through our head daily. Stressful events along with challenging days tend to make this voice louder and unescapable. That really hit home for me because I knew exactly what you were getting at. So if you could elaborate on that and kind of talk about it to get this going, that'd be great.
Well, I mean, we all talk to ourselves in our head naturally throughout the day when we're bored, not doing anything and stuff. And obviously, when you're deployed, you have a small group of individuals with you. But other than that, when you go into your little foxhole, your little room, your truck, it's just yourself. So, and then when things happen on deployment, it's hard for you to process. And so then you do the normal thing and you revert back to that little voice in your head. And you listen to that voice, and that voice will sometimes go to dark places. And so you tend to listen to them a little bit more.
And then over time, it talks more.
Yep.
Yep, very familiar. I
Yep.
know exactly how that goes. So the book in itself, could you kind of like go along with like what the purpose behind it was or what exactly it was that you're trying to actually get people to understand or kind of connect with while they're reading it?
Well, the purpose. For years, I had a lot of mentors tell me I should write the book, and then for years, I just was like, no, I was too busy. After the deployments, I picked up a squad leader, platoon sergeant, SRT position, and I always had soldiers underneath me, and I had busy nights, long days. I didn't have the opportunity that I did here at Fort Leonard Wood, where I don't have any soldiers for the first time. So I decided to start writing, maybe get some of that out there. And I noticed that something that I noticed with the job when it comes to like PTSD is that PTSD will evolve to your situation. So whereas after I got back from deployment, we'd still do field cycles, and so I had soldiers, I had busy life. It was easy to suppress. But when I got to Fort Leonard Wood, I noticed that like I wasn't getting. I could put my phone on vibrate and never get a call. There's no soldiers blowing me up, and I don't have any like crazy late nights and stuff. And so because of that, I have a lot more open time to myself, which means a lot more open time, a lot more thinking opens up other doors. And so I noticed that for the first time. I thought coming here I'd have a lot more time myself, but in reality, it was kind of backfiring a little bit.
TRADOC is definitely a completely different beast than being a force comm is, especially when you get in these positions like here. So you're a MP SLC instructor right now, correct? So it's definitely a huge difference in environment and the way that things go for you being here than it is in force comm. And just TRADOC in general, like there's a whole lot of stuff that we don't get. Like you're talking about the phone calls, all these other situations that go on. So I experience the same things myself, but like there's, it's that, it's good and bad. There's give and take, and there's a lot of things with it. So those kinds of phone calls that you're used to being in force comm, getting woken up at midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody got a DUI, or there was a fight downtown, or somebody's doing something. But here you don't have that at all. So it's a different environment, but yet you have. I wouldn't really call it quiet time, but there's just dead space, maybe was a good way to
Well, there's just a difference from like what you were talking in your book, like how you first got initially thrown into the mix, like right off the bat as a lower enlisted. And you know, you're from California, clearly.
Clearly.
Yeah. Clearly. you know, so going from California to, like, you know, not really, like, from what I read, like, not really knowing what you were going to do, and then, you know, joining as an MP. That's actually what I joined as. I joined as an MP. I didn't get my driver's license in time to go to basic and then, you know, to go to AIT, so I had to switch over to what I do now, which is ammo. But I would have loved to be an MP, but now that I think about it, I'm just like, God, I'm so glad that I did not go that route, you know? Yeah, so, but that's what I wanted to do, is, like, I wanted to be an actual cop when I got out of the military. I was like, oh, I'm gonna use that as a stepping stone, and then, you know, just reading, like, a little bit about your book, and then actually having MP friends and stuff like that, I'm like, I am so glad that I did not. And one of the things that did kind of stick out to me was the guy that came, like, your first person, like, when you became a medic, I guess, like, you had been asked to leave, you know, your, like, friends and stuff, and then go be a medic.
Yeah.
And then just, like, the first person that you came across, and we were actually talking about that, where it was, like, it's not what it's like in the movies, where it's, like, you, like, first see it, and you're just, like, wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there are those particular experiences and things that you come across and see that beforehand you see all the movies and, like, they over glorify it, or they add way too much Hollywood effect to it.
Yeah.
So then when you actually see it firsthand in real life, you're like, you think about it for a moment, like, that is definitely not what it's like in the movies at all. But then you have to deal with everything you actually saw. Like, I just saw this happen. I just saw that. And that entire story that you were talking about in there, again, a lot of things hit home because of the things that I've seen and witnessed over there myself. So it's definitely, like, to the heart and to the mind with very similar experiences. Different experiences than what I had, different locations, but still overall, I mean, it's still all the same things. Like, the same things happen to everybody. It doesn't matter which part of the world that you're in. If you're in a similar situation of being a combat environment and you're fighting people, it's all the same. It doesn't matter. You could be in a building, you could be out in Kunar or anywhere of the sort. It's all the same. The only difference is location. That's it.
And that's partially why I started writing it was, so the reason I've been so open about a lot of the things that have happened is I grew up with NCOs that were open with what they had experienced. So when I got to Fort Carson, I had gotten to a company who had just gotten back from Iraq. And so there's all these, you know, war veterans, they were flashing their combat patches, and they had just had a rough deployment in Iraq. And I looked up to these dudes, but the good thing about them was not only were they hard on me, but they were, like, open to talk about what they experienced. And so I knew that when I found myself, no matter where it may be, Afghanistan, Iraq, or whatever, you know, war is war. The enemy will change, the terrain changes, but war itself will not change. And so when I found myself in a situation in Afghanistan, I would think, oh, well, Sergeant Ring told me he did this in Iraq. And then I would just apply it and then use his experiences to my advantage. And so that's kind of what I want to do with the book. You know, I talk to my soldiers personally. They ask questions, they ask stories, you know, to gain for their knowledge. And so I figure because I have all this open time now, I might as well utilize it and put it to paper. And the two major pushes for me are to help the MP, you know, core capabilities. Like, I think, you know, if you look at where the MP Corps has started from and to where it is now, especially over the last 20 years, they've done a lot of things that, like, people just don't. I mean, they get a bad rap, let's be real. Like,
no, that's true.
I mean, but at the same time, MPs can be a little douchey sometimes, too.
Yes, you can.
You know, like, it's this call space spade. And I would do that, going off topic, like, I would do that with my younger soldiers. Like, when I was a squad leader, I'm not going to name names. I had a couple soldiers that, like, they loved giving tickets. And I'm like, bro, like, what are you doing?
For going 26 and a 25?
Yeah. In Hawaii, yeah. I'm like, what are you doing, bro?
Even here. They do it here.
I've seen those memes where it's, like, literally, like, the car flying in the air. And it's, like, that's the MPs coming to get you.
My 18 weeks of training have finally paid off.
So, yeah, I put them in check sometimes. But, you know, you can't blame them. The Army gives them all this, you know.
Yeah.
All this power. He's like 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. Yeah. I'm just like, come on.
So that was obviously a big push, was to help people understand who maybe not are MPs. Maybe they're MPs that never deployed. Maybe they're civilians they don't understand. Or maybe they're other MOSs that never have interacted with MPs and or not to this extent. And just understand that there are some MPs out there in the past 20 years of the war that, like, put foot to ass, like,
yeah,
you know, so.
And even, you know, since you just brought that up, so being an infantryman, and yes, it's true, the infantry and the MPs can coexist in harmony. From an infantry standpoint, dealing with MPs, there's a very lot, it's like high school rivals between the infantry and the MPs.
Yeah.
I actually have some really good friends that are the MPs, like yourself and the McManuses. Like several friends that are MPs. Like, you know, the only, from my experiences, the only not so good MPs I've ever come across are like the E1, the E4s that have this like high and mighty, I'm a demigod because I'm a cop. Like, yo, no, you're not, dude. You're still a private. Shut the fuck up. But some of y'all, like, actually, like, I've known a few. Like, even one of my drill sergeants, he's an MP. Good dude, squared away. I give him a whole lot of shit because he's an MP, but, you know, the clash is there. But there are a lot of things about the MPs that y'all have one of, like, the biggest MOSs that has, like, the worst image in the Army because you're an MP. So you're always the ones that, like, the fun vampires, the party killers, everything. So, I definitely know how that goes.
Yeah. So, but I wanted to at least put that out there. And, I mean, those are never going to go away.
No. They're not.
Supposed to be embedded, you know. But the whole point of this was just to, like, because something I noticed when I got to TRADOC is I feel like a lot of higher-ups, at least from our end as MPs, because I'm up in that building where there's a lot of higher-up individuals, mm-hmm. and
I love that building.
Yeah, I love that building too. Yeah, I just they seem to, some of them seem to have forgotten where they've come from.
Yes.
Some have forgotten, you know, what others have done, and so I wanted to put a, I don't know, I just wanted to, like, let them know, like, hey, like, you're not the best. Like, I've served with, and that's what the whole point is. I want to tell these stories of these dudes I've served with, some of the things they saw. So the book is, it's not supposed to be about me. I didn't want it to be a biography. It's why I want it to be like a memoir. But it's supposed to be talking about things that I observed from my first to second deployment and how they traversed into one another, and how they were like building blocks for myself, you know, and I'm just telling it through my eyes, essentially.
That, so one of the things I wanted to ask about as far as the book goes, especially with what I was talking about, that first couple of sentences from your author's note, is there an underlying, like, PTSD-related tone there that you're kind of, like, wanting to get connection with readers?
With the voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that starts it off. The PTSD portions, so the way the chapters are built in the book, there's a total of 10 chapters. The first 9 chapters are actually, like, reading material type chapters. And the first chapter throws you right into the second deployment, right into a situation, and then it'll flash back to, I don't want to say my childhood, but just kind of describing where I came from. And then it's almost like chronological. Before deployment, deployment, come back from deployment, deployment, come back from deployment. And it, you notice as we come back from deployment each time how trying to adjust everything. And then there's like the aftermath of it all, of how it's been thus far since then. And then chapter 10 is a resource chapter that I put the MPRA, which is the Military Police Regimental mm-hmm. Association, and how you could donate, what they do for the MPs, the Tyler Parton Foundation, which obviously that is a story.
Itself. We're going to get to that here in a moment. I have it listed here.
And then it's got active duty resources and then Department of Veteran Affairs resources, suicide hotlines, sexual assault hotlines, emails, phone numbers. You know, everything. So if someone picks up my book, they have the resources in their hand.
There you go. That's good. So I'm going to put your wife on blast here for a moment here. I'm going to put her on the spot. So with the book and all these stories and everything that's going on here, like how does that affect you, or how do you take with all that? Like, what's your input on all that? Being with, obviously, him being the writer of this book and these stories that go along with it.
So we've been married for 9 years, and I've never heard, like, a full story of some of the most extreme things that he's gone through. He's tried before, and I'm not going to push him. Like, you want to talk about something? I'm here. If you don't, that's cool, too.
Sounds familiar.
So when he was reading chapters from the book, he'd read me every chapter after he finished it. Like, what do you think? I'd be in tears for a lot of them because this is the first time I'm hearing about it. It's something that he experienced. So I think the book is huge for him. It's a big outlet. Like, a lot of people that know him, he is not a smoker. He's not a drinker. He likes to work out, but this has been something else that's been really good for him.
It's a good outlet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely healthy compared to, like, some of the outlets that people have, like, resorted to.
Where he's super excited about the book. Like, he comes home and can't do anything else. All he wants to do is work on the book, and he's loving it.
That's good, though. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, especially with all this, that even with the person that we were talking with this morning, you and I, and then other conversations that we've had. So there are a lot of outlets and things that, you know, people in the military, like, go without identifying that they could do. It's like the most common outlets for people in the military, drinking or other forms. But there's things like writing a book, getting things out there, like doing podcasts, writing, and everything else that you do, and things that just kind of like go, like, I don't want to say unnoticed, but not really well within one's grasp of being able to actually use as a source of outlet for all these different things, when it's too easy to do like the lower level things of just trying to deal with stressors, outlets, and everything of the sort. So she's a writer. She writes a lot. She does a whole lot. So I know that she could actually, like...
I think one of the hardest things for people is to get what you just did in your book and actually put it out there and be vulnerable. Like, the one thing that people, are afraid of vulnerability, you know? Because it's just like, what are they going to think about me? What are they going to say? And when you, like, overcome that fear of judgment and actually just go for it, you will realize that a lot of people are dealing with some of the same things that you're dealing with. And they'll read this and they'll be like, damn, like, I'm going through that. Yeah. And then maybe that will help inspire them to actually seek help. And, like, in your last chapter, it actually has, like, you know, information for them to be able to get that help that they need. So, you know, what are people doing in this time right now to where they're, you know, doing stuff like this to where, okay, you know what, I'm going to start my blog and someone that reads my blog, or I'm going to write a book and someone that reads my book, they're going to look at it and be like, damn, like, I went through that. And this person is literally, like, speaking to me and them sharing that with, you know, someone else and someone else and someone else. And not only are you reaching that person, but you're reaching now millions of people that have gone through what you have gone through. And it was because you got over that fear of judgment and just that being vulnerable that you were able to help other people. So it's like, how many people are you actually really touching right now? And which is going to be a lot. So.
And on not just that, though. So you've got, on what you're just saying, so you've got, like, the military aspect of it, of people that have been through similar situations, similar experiences. But then you have, you know, you also have a means of being able to reach out to, say, the civilian populace who just are, like, very infatuated with the military and with everything that's going on with the war over however many years now. Like, they like to see the experiences or learn about it and read about it. So not only are you able with this book to be able to capture the audience of the military people that have been there, some of the similar experiences, and that can actually relate to you on a personal and a mental level with those experiences, now you've got civilians that can read your book and everything with it, that they can just get more of an insight on exactly what it's like to be in the Army and be deployed and have to go through these things, because they have no idea what it's like. All they get is all the news feeds of everything that gets broadcasted, but they have no idea what it's really like to actually be in the Army, much less be in these type of situations. Yeah. So, like, your audience of capture, like, by the end of the year that you were saying, your book is going to be on all digital platforms as well as in major stores, like, everywhere else available for people to be able to purchase.
Yeah, well, from what the publisher's saying, it's going to be, for as far as military, it's going to be, like, all the major AFI's locations, the Bragg, the Benning, the Carson, stuff like that, the PX and stuff like that. So, well, you know, we'll see. But I was content with just getting on Amazon, just getting out there. You know, if I help one person, if I help the foundation for Lieutenant Barton, that's all that matters to me. Because from the way it's working with the publisher right now is, yeah, he's talking to me, and I was like, yeah, man, I'm just going to put it on Amazon. I'm done. Like, I don't want to sit on this book forever. I just want to get this done with. And he was like, we want to offer you a deal. Like, he's talking about some money. I'm like, bro, I don't. And then at the end of it, the money was, you're going to make a dollar. He's like, I'm telling you right now, you're going to make a dollar a book. That's it. I said, that's fine. Then I guess like, the dollar's going to go to the Lieutenant Park Foundation. Like, so whatever, the proceeds are going to go to the foundation for me. Like, I don't...
Well, since you were bringing that up, so let's go ahead and dive into that. So the Lieutenant Tyler Parton Foundation, so could you explain what that is and what the purpose behind it is?
So Lieutenant Parton was, he wasn't my organic lieutenant. He was with 361 Cav, and when we got split up, the thing about MPs is that we could work is like down to like the squad level. And so our platoon got split up, and the squad that I got attached to for medical purposes got moved up to 5 Bostic, and then we were attached to his platoon. And so he treated us like we were one of his squads. And so additionally, he had 4 squads in this cav platoon. And so when he was killed in September, prior to his death, he sent an email to his family, which the email's on the website that you can see, but he talked about how he was enjoying his job. He did a lot of civil affairs missions. He enjoyed helping the kids in Afghanistan, you know, handing out stuff, the education for the kids, the future of Afghanistan. And so when he died, his family, from what I understand, he made this foundation so that they could work with other U.S. organizations to help poverty kids in other foreign countries and stuff. So.
All right. So on the next piece I want to bring up is, so I know like when you first got here, we got set up, we were having conversation, we were talking about a bunch of stuff, and we kind of just started recording for it. So to get back into who you are and what your purpose is in the book and all that, can you go ahead and introduce yourself, the name of your book, and like where anybody could like find your book?
So my name is Sean Ambrose. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I've been in the military for just 12 years. As a military policeman, my book is titled "Ghosts of the Valley," but it will be on, like I said, Amazon, hopefully Barnes and Noble, Nook, and then all major AV's locations by the end of the year, and hopefully all the other digital platforms.
Okay, that's not bad.
So you guys have been together for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Were you with him during one of the deployments?
Yes.
Okay. Were you with him during the first deployment?
No.
Okay. Second. So, from your first deployment to your second deployment, how do you feel the first and the second deployment kind of like were kind of different? And then how do you feel like he was during the time when he came back? So, like,
different for me?
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I got back, I volunteered to go back immediately. And so this is when units were still, you know, pushing out. And when I got back, we had a sister company that was leaving, at the beginning of the year. And so or the middle of the year, so I jumped on it. And so I volunteered for the deployment before I met her. And the paperwork had to go through for the dwell time, to waive my dwell time paperwork and stuff. And
which then, I was the only wife that went up to sign during dwell time. I had all these girls standing behind me. And then they all chickened out. I marched all up there, and I turn around, and I'm like, where's all the other wives? Nobody else went up to sign the paperwork.
Because that was the word I got told. So I turned in the paperwork when I was single, and then we got married. And then I was just waiting for the dual time paperwork to kind of get approved. And then it got approved, but then they said, hey, since it got approved, but it got declined, because now that you're married, your wife needs to approve you to let you go, like a school field trip.
But then he also needed to get approval from me because I had no idea
so
that
he
did that.
So she had to go see the 4th ID General to sign off on the waiver, allow me to.
Dated for 3 months and got married.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like one of those everyone's like, oh yeah, okay, typical military, you just married for the money and deployment. I had no idea that he was going to be deploying.
Yeah.
It was like one of those whirlwind romances, like, oh my gosh, this is it. And he was like, let's get married. Okay. We went to courthouse and went to 7-Eleven, got a donut, and that was it.
7-Eleven, got a donut.
Yeah.
That's
very similar.
Okay, joking that like when we got married, we'd go to the dollar menu afterwards.
Straight up, yeah.
Straight up after the courthouse dollar menu, and then I upgraded somehow to hibachi, which was great.
She did something and she moved herself up in the world. I'm like, yeah, I'm taking you hibachi now.
But that's great. So, like, after deployment, like, how was your guys' relationship, like, off the bat? Was there an adjustment period, or...?
There is, because I didn't know, like, I knew him, but I didn't know that much about him in 3 months. And then we were forced to only communicate over the internet or the telephone. It wasn't in person, but it actually benefited us a lot because you can't just run away. You have to talk through everything. I'm obviously not a dick. I'm not going to run off while he's fighting a war, you know?
Well, there's some women
there
that
are,
do that.
Well, none of those are my friends, but that's not how I roll.
No, and the only reason why we say that is because we literally just did
this morning
a podcast,
yeah,
with when we were talking about that, how, like, you know, part of what comes with our job is, you know, we have to be gone for a certain amount of time, and it's not because we choose to leave. It's because, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, not a lot of, like, you know, spouses understand that. And they, you know, there's just that, like,
you definitely
whole...
have to be independent to be an army spouse.
Yes!
We literally just said that.
We're like, you have to be, like, your own person and have your own thing in order for you to be able to, like, date a military person. Because if you're gonna date them, marry them, you have to know that this person is going to leave. This person is going to have to work a certain amount of hours, and it's not like a normal job to where it's like, oh yeah, I come home like at 5, you know? And so
I like having 3 jobs. I like working. It's fun for me. Like, I meet people, I make money. But then I also need somebody like him. Like, when he came back, he missed anniversaries and Valentine's Days and all that stuff. He came with a balloon for every damn holiday that he missed. You know, like, you need somebody that's like, I appreciate you, thank you.
Good for you.
That's
what I'm talking about, right? This is why we're friends. I'm right there. That's good. That's good. There are a lot of people that don't do stuff like that. So there are a lot of, like, couples and relationships where, like, stuff like that just doesn't happen. So anytime I come across somebody that I know that would, especially because that's something I would do, and she knows this.
Yeah, but you do have those guys that are like, well, you knew what you were getting yourself into when you married me, so.
Oh, he said that to me before.
Then it's,
yeah, but that's more of like.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I think we started.
Honestly, that's the thing too. Was it today? She said something. I was like, yeah, I got TBI. I can't remember. I don't know.
I mean, you can say that, but. Do you really know what that entails when you sign up for that? No.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
right,
like you
right.
don't really know. It's like you think you know, but you don't really know. But then that also comes with, like, you know, like the service member, whoever, you know, is the one serving, to, like, actually do their part and to, like, reassuring the person, like, I still love you, I'm still here for you. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, you know, even though this is what I do, I still appreciate you and I acknowledge you.
It's so needed.
Yeah. That acknowledgement is, like, crucial to the marriage and to the relationship, because it's like, don't take that person for granted thinking that, oh, okay, because they knew what we do for a living, that it should be like a known thing. It's not just a known thing.
Yes.
You can't expect someone to just be there.
They
you know?
Did it last time, so they can do it next time.
Yeah. So
I feel like we're supposed to be taking notes right now.
Yeah. I mean, right now.
Take notes, people.
But that's what's good about the book, too, because it's good for spouses and family members to read it, because they see a different side, so they can connect with what he did over there, because he doesn't tell me everything that happens. He doesn't tell his mom everything that's happening. You don't want to scare them. So, like, when I was reading it, that's why I was in tears, because I didn't know he was going through all of those things.
Yeah.
He wants me to be okay on the home front. But if you're, like, a mom that's freaking out all the time, now she can read it, like, okay, he's home safe. He's been home for a while. Now I can understand.
I think as being a mom myself, like, I wouldn't know what to do if my son had gone through something like that. Just the fact that, like, if he were to, like, go outside and, like, some kid not, like, want to play with him and him crying to me, like, you know, and then just feeling, like, that heartbreak, and it's just, like, you don't want anything bad happening to, like, your kids. And to, like, as, like, your parent have to read, you know, like, what you went through, like, it's very heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's like, damn, like, now I understand what you went through. So, like, and then, like, with you, you know, like, reading what he went through, and it's not the easiest thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this being an outlet to actually talk about those things and being able to share that is, like, the greatest strength and vulnerability that a man can actually do. And, like, we talked about the whole part of connecting,
yep.
not just about, like, you know, like, your masculinity, but, like, you're also, like, your feminine side, because we all have that within us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I have a very masculine side and also a very feminine side, and everybody does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just being able to, like, be in tune with both and being in a relationship with both, that's freaking amazing.
You can't always, you know, we as men, and especially with what we do in the military, we can't always be expected to just be the complete 100% stoic hard ass 24/7, especially when we have families and spouses and kids involved. I will admit, like, that was something I struggled with for several years, a long time ago. But over time, after having like certain experiences and certain conversations, like, it's definitely something that I've learned that I have to be able to open up to and expose, because the Army does a very good job at making us believe that we have to be completely stoic and hard-ass and emotionless 24/7.
Especially in infantry life.
Yes. So then we're expected to, that we spend all this time having to be this kind of way, and then we're expected to go home and be with our spouses and our kids, and then all of a sudden have to be like a completely different person. It's a transition. So it's definitely something that needs to be, you know, acknowledged by most about, like, the differences that's required instead of just being one particular way all the time. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very valid point. Go you.
Go me.
Yeah. So, book aside, I want to change the topic here for a moment. So, you and I have some gum bunny pictures and things to do out in your property that we got to go take care of at some point in time. Yeah. Because we not only we got to be serious, but we got to have our goofy moments as well. That's and right. you brought it up, so I'm gonna go ahead and acknowledge it right now. So I'm talking like silkies, face paint,
silkies.
Guns. Yeah. Yes.
He wears them around the house. Like, I'm just like
Ranger panties.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I'm not complaining by any means, but at the same time, I'm just like, oh my God, can you put some clothes on?
See, we can't be serious all the time. That's why I brought that up. I had to change that up a little bit. I did see the pictures the other day when you posted, when you're out there, you're quarantined, I got to cut the grass life on your riding lawnmower. I saw those. Yeah, you can't hide that.
I was trying to pull security.
Yeah. Mounted patrols.
I got neighbors out there. I got to patrol.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So is he goofy at home, like around you, other like by himself? Like, do you get a good amount of goofiness
he
from him?
He is, but I think you guys see a different goofiness than I do. I think I'm more of a goofy. She laughs at me all the time. Guys,
she's
gay.
Yeah, she knows how military like guys are.
Yeah, I questioned him for a little while. Well, he's not like, he's a bigger guy, but he's not the biggest guy. So all these like 6'2", I'd turn around and be bear hugging him from the back, humping him. Like, whoa, what is happening right now?
You know what though? I mean, like, that's army life right there in itself. It's completely normal.
Afghanistan photos of me naked on each other's beds. I'm like, okay.
Was it Thursday?
Probably.
It was probably Thursday. Like, we'll say for conversation's sake, every single one of those happened on a Thursday.
Every single one
on a Thursday. Man love Thursday.
Oh,
it's a
God.
Thing.
It's authorized.
Wow. It's authorized, yes.
Oh, my God.
Rules, right?
As long as you wear a PT belt, you're good.
Safety first.
Oh, the PT belt. The power of the PT belt, really.
You can't go eat without it, so.
Oh, my God. Yep, you can't go. And God forbid you be sweaty or dirty before you go into a DFAC over there.
Oh, jeez.
Is there anything else that like you kind of wanted to talk about or bring up before we kind of bring this to a wrap?
No, unless you guys have any particular questions.
No, we talked about the book, the two particular things. Yeah, exactly. So like there was the two things I brought up in particular that I just wanted to kind of get you to elaborate on for the listeners and anybody that's kind of interested so they understand the why behind it. But if there's anything else you wanted to bring up.
No, I mean, they'll figure it out once they read the book. I mean, hopefully they enjoy it. I think that it's better than me telling them. Like, my family, I'd rather have them, because they don't know, like, I don't tell my family everything, but now, for the first time, they're going to have to kind of accept things that happened years ago. So
yeah.
Let them figure it out.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll go ahead and call this one a wrap.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here, especially bringing up the book and talking about it so everybody understands what's going on and where to find it. I'm sure listening to this, people are going to want to go pick it up and take a read. If not, they at least know where to find it and where to find you. So thank you for being here.
All right, y'all.
Believe in yourself, trust yourself, take responsibility. You have everything you need within you. Make sure to subscribe and follow us on Instagram. I am Anna Valencia, and
I am Rob Sepulveda.
And this is the Possibilitarian Podcast.